You are listening to a production of the Toll Network, home of biting analysis. This is UncommonCast RX 140, Dying Hearts. I am Amit, the heart-snacking critic, Duat Pink.
And I'm Sona, the well-dressed critic, Duat Green.
Putting heroes on trial. Critical Squadron. Duat Ranger.
I remember how in the Hindu scriptures, Shiva took his multi-armed form and said, "Now I am become death, destroyer of worlds." I am Godzilla. This is the Godzilla noise that he does in all the comics. Scream!
I believe that.
You cannot accurately do that voice with your vocal cords. You have to conceptualize it somehow. And the words. Skriong. Destruction, atomic power, nature versus humanity. Humanity loses. There's a new movie.
Speaking of Oppenheimer and non sequiturs, I was actually thinking about making a nice Tumblr post about Ghost and calling it Kamen Rider Ghost Destroyer of Feels.
That sure has been happening lately.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get into it. Get off this intro and do the second intro. Join us as we take a critical eye to Kamen Rider Ghost. Will Takeru save himself and the Kamen Rider franchise in the 57 days he has left on this blue planet? Find out how we think he's doing as we pass judgment on Kamen Rider Ghost 29, Encore, The Trials of the Great Escape Artist.
Our writer was Mori Nobuhiro. Our director was Koichi Sakamoto. Our action director still Miyazaki Takeshi. This is Sakamoto's debut on Ghost, and I guess that means I have to talk about him. But I'm not going to do it that much, because we've talked about him a lot on this show, and it always leads in a direction that makes me super uncomfortable. But he's a very prolific, if not slightly controversial, writer and Sentai director, and you can go look up his credits if you don't remember the ones we've talked about.
Mm. It definitely is kind of a... It does tend to happen that it leads to a direction where it gets uncomfortable because, you know...
Yeah, don't do that!
I won't! This time I won't! I'll focus more on the story things.
Don't do that!
Well,
ironically, also a director of a bunch of Power Rangers. Mm. And I think he even, like, led a lot of the American actors in doing stunts in the show.
I guess I have to preface now that this episode, I was actually fearing the worst when I heard Sakamoto was directing, and I wasn't sure that Toei was able to keep him on the leash. But after reading Zono's tweets and kind of watching the episode, I was thankfully relieved that my fears were pretty much unfounded this time around.
I told you, it was basically a non-issue this episode.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The one big thing I'm on the fence about, I don't think really had anything to do with him.
Which is very nice. He's finally learned, or they finally learned, being the producers, you know. The thing is, Koichi Sakamoto, he, as like an action director, he's fine. He's absolutely fine when he doesn't go overboard with the action, because when he does go overboard with action, it tends to become pretty boring. But it's like, when he's just doing the action directing, he's absolutely fine. Great even. But when he's like doing storytelling, he is just terrible. He should not be doing like any sort of writing or like... dictating how the story should go, because it tends to be really just kind of the sort of really loud, sort of lame Shonen Jump trash, and it's like, okay. But no need to worry about that this time around, because this is a good episode, and, you know, since we got decent writers here working for Ghost, so it's like, don't need to be afraid of that. That's my piece.
Well, that being said, let's go ahead and move into the focus and talk about what thoughts, feelings, messages came out of us after or while we were watching these episodes, or this episode.
Tucker's confrontations, that's a word, with Houdini paint this very nice message of kind of pushing ahead even when something is hard. And I know that's something that we've talked about a lot with Ghost. But this is directly, like, Houdini directly says, this could end badly. This is, like, there is very little good that could come of this. And, like, you can get hurt by things, and you can end up heartbroken, but if it's something that's important to you, you should kind of do your best to see it through, and it's better to try and fail than to, you know, live with the regret of not trying at all. And it's really interesting to me that Houdini is the one kind of on the other side this time, where he's the one that wants to just kind of give up and be like, you know what, let's just not do this because it could end really badly. Usually it's Takeru kind of in the moral conflict on that, and the icons have to kind of push him towards the side of progress, and he has to kind of readjust and reevaluate his ideals. And even in the end, he doesn't really try to convince Houdini of his views. It's just Houdini is still very set in how he thinks, but he respects the way that Takeru's going about things, and that's kind of a nice lesson in itself.
I think it's good to have trusted friends in whom you can confide, because you never know when you might become lost and need help getting on the right track. Elaine lost his father, who started him on the path to humanity again after he'd been so attached to the system of power in Ganma World. Elaine has a crisis of conviction and wanders aimlessly, and that's okay, especially because he has people around him who are willing to act as guides to help him find his way. I think it's especially important that Fumi and Kanon, I have a really hard time pronouncing that name, and I probably always will, but the two of them give Elaine the choice to be as he wishes. Fumi expresses disappointment at his return to his uniform, but she still embraces him. And then also, you know, Kanon asks him to go help in a fight. She doesn't say, you have to do this. Even though I think there is some value in telling someone, like, look, you're morally obligated to take certain actions because of your position,
abilities. I think the asking was very much, hey, this is about this girl's dad, and I know you're having issues about your dad right now. So, like, if this is with, this may kind of push your boundaries, and I don't know if you're in a state that you're okay with that right now.
Yeah, and like, I think it's a quiet thing in there, but it's a great example to show of not just pushing someone where they're not comfortable. You should be sensitive to that. Let's see. Let me put the uniform. Okay, so Elaine is safe to struggle and shift until he is sure of himself again, because he's surrounded by kind, loving, and supportive people. And I just think that's really beautiful, and that's probably the thing that struck me the most in this episode. Sarsen, do you have anything to say here?
No, I think you guys said all that needs to be said. And anything else I don't really have to add. So I guess we'll have to move on to the bones section. Because what bones do you have to pick with this bit of ghost?
I really don't know how I feel about Fumi dying. And I'd like to know if that was maybe something that happened externally, like the actress maybe is having some health issues and had to leave something. It felt very odd. And I mean, throughout the entire episode, I could kind of feel it coming in my bones. The actress kind of portrayed the lead up to that amazingly. And I kept telling myself through the episode that I would be wrong, because it seemed like such a weird thing to do. And this sort of death doesn't happen in Rider.
Not.
Especially not on screen, and not with a character who's at this position in the cast. So it felt very, very strange. But then we kind of have Elaine doing this slow-mo run with the art supplies, and I'm like, oh no, this is what's happening. And it just, it feels very awkward to me story-wise. And I guess I have to wait and see how it's played out. How the show handles it with the entirety of the cast and not just Elaine, because Fumi meant something to people other than him, and if it turns out to be a thing that's just to progress him, I'm gonna be kind of annoyed.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Fumi deserves a lot better than that.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to giving Elaine the reality of death. And kind of presenting that to him, but also his father just died, and I think he's kind of aware of it. So this is all, right now, as of the end of this episode, it's sitting very off with me, but I'm willing to kind of reserve final judgment until the whole, the event has played out as a whole.
I do have to kind of applaud that they had, like, the guts to actually pull this off, because I don't really remember, like a death, like, there's been character deaths, like, character deaths, like,
well, character deaths, but they're always a major character as a result of some sort of conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
It's never just someone is old and passes away peacefully.
Yeah.
Just because they're elderly.
Yeah, it is quite like. Isn't that fun for kids? Let's give them the idea of mortality, which actually I'm all for.
And again, I think there's a lot of merit to that.
Yeah, there is. It is.
It's just something about the timing of it and the fact that it was connected directly to Elaine is what's setting me off.
Yeah, I hope if they're really just gonna do this, I hope that it isn't really like the sort of thing where like Fumi's dead and it just kind of advances like Elaine's character, like it's like that sort of thing. I hope it kind of does like I hope we kind of see like Fumi's family, because we haven't so far seen like, you know, does she have a granddaughter? Does she have a daughter, son, or grandson? Any family? I mean, because I'm guessing she would, but who knows? I don't know. There's like, I'm don't have as much like problems with this as you do, but I do kind of want to. I'm going to see what they're gonna do with it.
I don't know if I'd call it problems. I'm just really apprehensive about it.
Yeah.
You know, as, you know, someone who's lost grandparents and had that have a huge effect on me, I'm just, and as someone who, my grandmother right now is not in a very healthy state, we're not, you know, worried about her passing away, because I am pretty sure that woman's going to live forever. But just, I want to see how it's handled.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, I'm very worried about it being handled poorly, and just that and the timing of it is making me nervous about it.
Yeah, let's hope the, you go on.
I'd like to add something, and then Sona, I think you should move on.
Yeah.
I kind of thought it was interesting that, you know, like you pointed out, Adonis just died, and then Fumi's dying, and of course we didn't see the aftermath of that in this episode yet, but I took a less well-informed stance than you on it, because I didn't think about it as, oh no, what if like characters other than Elaine aren't affected by this. I only focused on, and this is maybe an issue with me, that, oh, that's interesting, Elaine has lost a father and now he's lost a sort of mother figure after, you know, Ghost Mom probably died like a long, long time ago. Maybe 200 or more years ago. And I just figured that it was like really settling, like cementing in his mind. Like, there are people and they die and you have to do something with your life because you have it still. And like,
yeah, it's,
I don't know. It's going to be okay,
Like, there's just the fact that Fumi was originally very close with Kanon and Makoto.
Yeah.
She was very important to them, especially Kanon. And I don't want to see them not get to have anything from this, since they're the ones, especially canon, who brought Elaine to Fumi. Mm. And again, this is Ghost. This is entirely dealing with dead people. So we could end up having something very interesting come of this once we get all those people out of coffins, because that's happening at the end of the series.
Also,
I will put money on that we are getting everyone out of those coffins. So we could have something very interesting and very fulfilling come of this as a result later, and I can only hope. But that's just right now, at present, I've just been burned too many times in the past couple of years to not be afraid.
Although so far, I feel like Ghost has been handling the side cast really well, and, you know...
Ghost has been handling everything amazingly.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, been burned too many times in the past several years. And I'm just nervous.
Yeah, I can.
But,
I can
pushing forward. Because we can't talk about this all episode. We've got other things to cover, because so many other things in this episode were amazing.
Oh, yes.
But I do have one more bone to pick. After Elaine gets the change of clothes and he's feeling kind of awkward and uncomfortable, Fumi's still talking about how he kind of feels lost, and that if he can't figure out kind of what his heart is telling him, he should listen to what Kanan and Makoto were telling him. And, you know, Makoto says that Makoto then follows this with the fact that since Elaine is still getting used to actual emotions, Makoto can wait. But I'm not sure what he means by that. And it's a weird line, and it kind of threw me in that moment. Like, wait for what? What are you talking about?
I feel like, and I think how it is, it's like he hasn't really adjusted to, like, you know, these sort of emotions of feeling lost and, you know, being, like, finding sort of fulfillment in, like, living in this world and whatever. So I think it's probably, like, giving time to sort of, like, let Elaine
The he in the statement that can wait is Makoto. Makoto says, I can wait.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what that means. Like, what are you waiting on Elaine for?
I guess sort of...
Like, to be able... Is it to be able to, like, readily be able to fight with everyone?
I'm guessing it's, like, be able to kind of, like, that Elaine kind of needs his, like, own time to kind of sort all these things out. And then when he, like, knows... like, what he's feeling and knows what he wants to talk about, he can talk with Makoto. I'm guessing that's what they mean. I don't know.
It's a very vague statement, even, like, in context. There's not really any context for what... And the fact that Makoto specifically says I instead of we...
Yeah, it was a little odd. It's either, you know... for their romance, or because he needs to talk something out with him, and I know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But it's probably I honestly felt like it was either one of two things, and the first is that he wants to give him, like, he's gonna let Elaine take his time and have his space to flounder until he gets a sure footing, and he's, like, not gonna push him, kind of like Fumi suggesting to push him, I feel. And, you know, she's older. Sometimes older people are different than younger people and don't quite understand us. So I can see her, like, not being prejudiced, but having a bias of, like, come on, feel already, just do it. And if you can't, let these people do it for you. And it's like, no, it's just, you know, we need more time. We're not as hardened as you older people are, you know, just because you have more experience. And the second thing would be maybe he has to have a serious talking to about him, like, hey, Elaine, remember when you, like, took over my mind and possessed me and all these things, like, dude, that really wasn't cool, and I would like yeah, maybe that's what it's about. Right, that's kind of what I felt like it was more leaning towards. Mm. Okay, so, for me, I dislike the inexplicable chains when Houdini possesses, Shirayuki. It's just a thing. I know. It's a show. It's fun. It's cute, but eh. The scene with Adele and Edith felt tacked on and a bit pointless, as if its main purpose was to remind us that they are characters in the show.
It's actually kind of a thing that I've noticed in the last few, really noticed in the last few episodes of Ghost, that they kind of done this thing where it's like, hey, it's like, remember how in the last, like, episode we had this happening, and then we kind of explicitly show the scene of, like, from the past episode, which isn't really a bad thing necessarily, and so far, like, this show has handled it more or less naturally through dialogue, and it isn't, like, sort of, like, hey, as you know, or hasn't really, I feel like, gone. It's just kind of a weird thing that I haven't, like, I don't know, did Drive do this? Gaim didn't do, I don't remember Gaim doing this quite. Well, yeah. Yeah, it isn't so far.
That's true.
Yeah, it isn't too bad, and I guess it's like, it's kind of helpful for the kids in the audience too. So, I don't know, it's just kind of a odd quirk that's been that's kind of becoming a thing in this show.
Alright. I think the same purple monolith descended and took Adele's form again. I want some variety here, because, you know, there are other colored monoliths, and they could all descend and have a different crest or whatever, but, or, and, you know, Adele's same face, so, like, you know, make it happen, please.
Mm.
I guess so.
I guess on my end that I...
Now I'm just picturing, like, well, no, nothing frivolous. I was going to say, like, the two of them, like, hanging out, rolling in the sand, having ice cream, but, yeah, that wouldn't happen because that's too frivolous for Gonma World.
Mm.
Or Utopia.
And...
Sorry.
And to me, I don't know. I feel like the sort of tilted camera angles get a little too much after a while, and the sort of, they are always from the waist up, which is, I don't know. It feels like it's kind of weirdly too, like, it's like, can we get at least one or few full body shots? It's like this. It's like, oh my god. It's like this is the first time I'm wishing that, oh man, maybe have at least a few wide shots, because now it kind of feels like everything's tilted and on, like, this sort of close up, and it's kind of odd. But that's a director thing, and it isn't really too terrible. It isn't really obnoxious, like, too obnoxious. But it is kind of like, just a little bit of variety, please. But, you know, and now that we've gotten all our bones out of the way, what are the things that made you go, whoa, while watching Ghost this time? I was hoping that Onari, in the moment when he had the idea to get into the deep comnet, that it wouldn't just be like an ineffectual joke, like that part where he was doing, like, the Matrix stages, like, we kind of follow up where... You know, he was healed, like, whereas helping, like, and a healing Jaware, like, we would kind of have a continuation of that, and he manages to actually do something that works, and is actually brilliant and completely in character, and that's exactly what happens, and it's great!
Onari is a gift and a treasure, and we are not good enough for him.
Yeah, it's like...
We do not deserve him.
Yeah. It's great! It's, you know... We've so
if
many.
If the show doesn't give me context on why he has this outfit and this boombox, I will make reasons.
I think, Sony, you should whip up a webcomic if by the end of the series he doesn't.
Oh man, Onari's wild teenage years.
I will make reasons.
Cheers.
It is so real.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Look, I've already gotten Delinquent Rinko as canon.
Oh, yeah.
So.
This is true.
And holy sh! This you and Akari slapped Igor again. Akari don't give a fuck. It's like she's slapping him while he's in monster form, and it's like immediate reaction too. It's like he's like, aha, I've stopped you, I got you now. And the first thing she thought, oh, this slap. Yeah, that's great. That's so great. And I love that it's becoming an actual thing too. Like Akari just slaps. Akari doesn't. Akari, she's too tough for this. She's too good for all of us, too. Oh man.
We honestly don't deserve Akari and Onari. We don't.
Since it is like, yeah, since this isn't like Sakamoto at his worst and actually restrained, the action is actually pretty decent. You know, really cool, like sort of hand-to-hand combat. To be fair, we've had that quite a lot recently. We did have like the sunglass slasher a few times, but we don't really. We mostly see a lot of like just, you know, close quarters stuff this time around without the weapons.
I actually think Sakamoto shone most in Fumi dropping the takoyaki bomb.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like I'm pretty sure that was him. Anyway, I think that was like some of the best bit of the episode.
Yes. Yeah, when he actually gets serious, he actually is a decent director, you know, visual director at least. Also quite surprised that you know they actually followed up on like Houdini's like the whole thing about his skepticism and debunking of spiritualists, like after like how they kind of just made that whole conflict between Isaac Newton and Himiko, the whole science versus magic thing, which isn't exactly true to Isaac Newton's character in history. So it's actually kind of surprising that we see kind of this, like, this, because, I don't know, is Houdini's career as, like, a spiritual sort of, you know, skeptic. Is it like well known? Because
I don't believe it is.
Yeah, because I at least when I heard of Houdini, I mainly just know him for the magic tricks. So it's kind of neat that they kind of did something with this idea. And even though it's mainly kind of used as a premise for like the main theme of the episode, which is like moving on and stuff like that. But it's still kind of neat that, you know, that's a thing that they're kind of building on, kind of like making this sort of like, hey, kids, this is what Houdini also did, you know, not just like cool chain tricks, but also like, you know, debunking mysticists and hokies and hokey people. You know.
Hoax people. Hoax people. Like,
my mouth was
like,
good.
I'm hokey.
Hoax people.
I've never done a hoax. Alright, Sona, moments?
Yeah, kind of jumped on a couple things that I had wanted to say. Onari is the best, and I love him more and more every week. There's a lot that's really beautiful in the conversations that Elaine has with Fumi in this episode, and kind of about feeling lost and empty, and about how, you know, he's young, he has the time to figure out kind of what his heart is telling him, and how much what you want can change over time. And, I mean, honestly, this was a conversation about depression. This is, like, Elaine was like, I feel empty. I have no emotions. I want nothing out of life. I feel like I'm dead. And he was like, you know what? That's okay. That happens to people. And, you know, give it time and you'll kind of figure things out. And I think it was handled in a very sensitive and beautiful way that reminded me a lot of how Kiva handled depression. And I'm glad that Elaine had someone to actually talk about this with, because Wataru didn't. And I wanted just to sit him down like, you're okay. And I'm glad that Elaine had someone to just, you know, sit him down and be like, it's gonna be okay. It's gonna take time, but it's gonna be okay. Wow, look at everyone simultaneously coping with the deaths of their fathers, and how differently they handle it, and how it all fits into one cohesive story. You know, since Aelif isn't here, I have to take the shot at Drive, in his honor. because I know that if he was here, he would. So that one's for you, Aelith. Akari asking Elaine to call her by her name was really sweet, and I want to see more of the two of them interacting, because they've got this very interesting dynamic. And I really want to see their relationship develop, just as people who know each other. Not anything more than that. I just want to see more of them interacting, because their interactions are always very interesting to me. Again, Akari giving Igor the business was fantastic. Like, he was, not only was he just in, like, Ganma Ultima, he had put in another Ganma and had a giant axe bursting out of his chest. And she was like, no, I'm not having this. Stop it. Like, doesn't even think about it, just puts on the face and is like, no. And he falls down. She slapped him so hard he fell down. Bless this girl. I'm also glad that someone finally put on an ugly sweater. I'm sad it wasn't Javert, but it was someone in an ugly sweater, and I'll take it.
I just need to point out that the axe is actually coming out of a horse that's coming out of the guy's chest.
Or
stomach, and that's
it's
just
ridiculous.
Bonkers.
And she smacked him right in the face. No time for this.
Man, I keep forgetting the guy's name, but the monster designer on this, I just have to say kudos to you, because I did not see that originally when we dealt with the Axe Ganma. Wow. You
also,
really
it was nice to see Annie Oakby again.
Yes, it was so great too. All right, but quickly, because I've got a side to go join in a little bit. So Fumi telling Elaine to listen to his friends was something I really liked, because I just thought it was again, as much as I kind of talked about it earlier and said, like, well, maybe she was being an old person and being pushy. Not that there's anything wrong with old people. I'm just saying they have different sensitivities and sensibilities than younger people. Like, I like her faith in the goodness of his friends to help him and that they'll guide him to something that's good for him. So that's nice. A little paternalistic, but nice. Or maternalistic in this case. So Makoto encouraging Elaine, I also thought was nice. Like, hey, bro, don't worry. There's time. Everything can wait. Again, talked about this earlier. Cannon putting her coat on Fumi was so sweet, and I need to hold on just a second. Anyway, the thing with the coat, it's just sweet because it shows how much she cares for Fumi. And, she's just a nice old takoyaki lady and she doesn't want to be cold. So she puts her coat on her, and that's really great. The next thing I have is Akari calling out Elaine and not using her name. It was great. I have a bunch of caps of that scene, and if I could make GIFs, I would.
I'll do it.
Okay, you should. The slap, I love the slap. It's so good. And then something interesting, Takaru was not able to pass through a door, with his ghostiness, and, it's because it had a Ganma seal on it, and apparently it's one that's powerful enough to keep him out, so I just thought that was kind of interesting, nice plot contrivance. Hey, there's this thing that he can't pass through to keep him out of here until next episode, you know? So that was pretty cool. Let's go ahead and move on to prophecy. What do you see happening in the future of Ghost?
Makoto's got something going on now. Maybe someone else in his body is... Maybe the Deep Spectre icon has its own kind of consciousness. It seems to a little. He does the whole, like, punching into Takaru's fist, and Takaru sees this vision of someone being like, I want to do it. Let me do that. And Makoto's like, no, leave him alone. And I want to know what that's about. I'm interested in this development.
That is kind of weird. I kind of thought it was maybe him talking with Magistrate Edith, but I think the context and the framing is totally different, so. Next episode, at least, I expect lots of mourning over Fumi. Because the Fukami kids know her and stuff, so. And everyone else has gotten to know her, I believe, so. I can definitely see that happen.
I think with the Deep Spectre icon, I don't know, I probably won't happen, but I kind of want to see maybe like maybe Deep Spectre icon is gonna feed into like all these sort of hidden issues that Makoto has been like keeping in himself, because you know, being like several years.
That's really what I was saying last
week.
Yeah,
but I'm just
kind of about that.
I'm just kind of like also kind of agreeing with it that, you know, I kind of hope that it becomes a thing.
But like now I'm wondering if it like is this living thing that's now inside him being like, okay, but I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And like kind of outright forces him to confront these things because it just starts like yelling at him about them.
Mm.
Do you just want to see the return of Dragon?
Yes. Mm.
Okay.
Look, I never got resolution to
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know. I feel the same way. It sucks. It was stolen from you, right?
It was. Damn CGI budget.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on into questions. Question one on icons. Do you think Elaine will unlock some way to use Necrom that doesn't necessitate him using Ganma as fuel?
I've had it mentioned to me that he's getting an upgrade of some sort, but I don't know any details beyond the fact that it exists, because my friends are good and are pretty good about my low tolerance for spoilers, so they don't tell me too much. And I may have misunderstood something somewhere in that conversation, just in information that they're not giving me because of that. But they need to give this kid something if we're going to keep using Grateful, because Elaine is otherwise completely useless in a fight.
Hmm.
And I'm positive Takeru's getting one more power-up, but I also know no details on that, so I don't know if it will still involve using all of the icons.
Right. Okay, I'm hoping that once his heart is convicted and committed to something of his own, or for his own sake, it will enable him to power Necrom from within himself. Perhaps it can be linked to the power of his soul or something. As part of the fascist machine, Elaine was going through the motions and indiscriminately crushing the lives and individuality of other, or of the faceless, masses to accomplish his goals. It would be a beautiful turn if he had to struggle and work hard to power Necrom on his own for the sake of others. Because it'd be like a complete reversal at that point.
Mm.
So, Sinan, you want to weigh on this, or should I just go to question two? Because I see you have a lot of response there.
Where? On the Ganma Fuel one?
On the Houdini. Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah, let's move on to the Houdini one. I have nothing on this one.
Okay. Was Houdini handled well here?
I really enjoyed Houdini in this episode. I love how Houdini via Yuki was handled. I loved the voice switching. I thought that was a really neat way of doing it. Kind of going in and out of Yuki and Houdini's voice depending on what they wanted to emphasize. And also that Houdini was able to fight really well in Yuki's body, which is why the chains didn't bother me. They were never used as a restraint for her. They never used that to manipulate her body at all. Because if they had, that would have freaked me out. And that would have been really gross.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. Instead, she actually was using them as a weapon. And, you know, smacking Ganma with them. And that I thought was pretty cool. Also, the whole, there's no such thing as ghosts. Houdini, there are several ghosts in this room right now, and you are one of them. Shut up.
Yeah, like, my point still stands.
That was a great joke. And it was nice that Akari seemed to have this bit of background on Houdini and his practice of debunking psychics, not physics. Because that seems like a thing that she would have been really interested in about him, and probably, you know, after, you know, Makoto made friends with him, with the icon, she probably, you know, did some reading up on him. Because I could see her keeping track of everyone, and that seems like something she would latch onto. And her bringing it up, it was cute kind of how it caught Houdini off guard, and he just kind of looked at her like, don't go down that road, I am making a point over here. Just overall, I really loved kind of everything they did with Houdini.
Two points real quick before I go on to mine. Akari actually mentioned, if you remember, when Houdini first showed up, that he was a great skeptic, and I think the implication
That's right.
Was about spiritualistic stuff and you know, scammers and things like that. But we definitely, I think Aleph put together that history or the like little mini biography on Houdini, and he talked about all that there. So we knew that then, and then it was cool to see that brought back up in the show actually. So that was really satisfying for me.
I'd actually completely forgotten about that. So my memory is bad.
It's great to see the creative team just like holding on to that. Like they put a little pin in it and then they picked it up and ran with it over here, which is cool. And then the second thing is interesting, Houdini himself use chains and restraints and whatever as his weapon, as his tool for accomplishing the things he wanted, and that's exactly what happens with Houdini Yuki. So, like, you know, hats off to everybody for that. So I do think Houdini was handled well here. There was no equalization or, I'm sorry, sexualization or objectification of Yuki. And while she didn't need to be a student to have a connection with Houdini, it is working well so far, because the connection is the mourning over a parent. Houdini chafes at Yuki's naivete and wants to protect her from getting hurt. He doesn't want to acknowledge her choice in the matter, in favor of protecting her from something she can't handle. It's a natural extension of what he did in life, but there is this paternalistic spin on it that shows the dark side of wanting to protect someone from something painful. We have to struggle and endure to grow, and he can't quite see that because he is blinded by pain. And I think that definitely links into the whole thing with Fumi trying to, like, push stuff on Elaine, and a little bit of, like I said, she had, like, a maternalistic point of view towards him. Like, oh no, it's for his own good, we need to really push him towards these things. But at the same time, she and Cannon also, like, gave him choice. Like, they invited him to join them and invited him to fight and these things, whereas Houdini's like, no, I'm not going to let this girl get involved because she shouldn't for her own sake. So I think that was working in both directions in this episode also. So I'm done.
Yeah, Houdini is very fun, and it definitely follows up on the sort of way the character acts. It kind of follows up on how these gamma-possessed humans are these sort of larger-than-life characters, like how, you know, with the Ryoma icon, Himiko wasn't as much, I get, but it was in a different sort of level of...
Yes, she was.
Well, it was a different sort of way. This one's like sort of huge sort of body motions, whereas she was just kind of like, sort of like just her presence was said all...
You must be talking about, what is it?
That's because the girl without her had the big body motions.
Exactly.
That's true.
And
Himiko was more refined and stated. But you're talking about Gonariumon,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What a good time that
was.
Yes. Thank you, Rob. You rocked our world that night or day, whatever.
on Amit, now that Amit brought it up, it definitely wasn't as creepy as I would have feared, because when I saw the screenshots of this episode, like, before it aired, and then when I saw the design, I was like, I can see this going really badly, knowing this is Sakamoto, but it didn't, and it actually was pretty sensible and worked, and, you know, the chains, they didn't become sort of like, they were there because, you know, Houdini has the chain. So it's like, I guess that's like, it's a, like a neat way to kind of visually distinguish this icon, this Ganma possessed human from the other. So, you know, I'm like, you know what? Okay, sure. Works for me. It's like they didn't go like completely like really, really sleazy with it. And that's great. And that's really good. And when you scrub it all out, it's great. It's, you know, I got no issues with Houdini. Houdini's a fun character and brings a lot to the table.
Even as he lays someone on it and saws them in half. No, he never did that. Sorry. Okay, so question three. We keep going back and forth as to whether these heroic icons are the actual souls of these people or a cultural collective construct. How does Houdini's portrayal affect your reading of this? Holy smokes.
I feel like we're somewhere in a middle ground, and this risks waxing a little on the spiritual religious side, but we've been talking about human souls for 6 months, so this was bound to happen eventually. I give us credit for going this long. If we consider the soul to be energy, there's the principle that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So the energy of the soul continues to exist after death, even if it kind of disseminates into the universe and doesn't stay as one collection of energy. It's possible that with the heroic icons, thinking of it that way, some or all of the energy that made up the original soul is recondensed into the icon, but a lot of that energy has now probably also been in the souls of people who have lived and died since then. And that person's social knowledge of that figure probably also plays a part in how the energy reinterprets itself into that heroic figure. But this is kind of a lot of interpretation of my personal interpretation of how souls and afterlives and things work, and, you know, what I think about them being squeezed into this somewhat relevant mold of a children's hero show.
I think it actually works to that. I think it works totally for this show because the show doesn't just have this sort of heavy, like, techno-mysticism thing going on. So it, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we kind of have this sort of science versus spiritual thing kind of just with Akari and Onari, not even kind of on a techno level, where Akari is a physicist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a property of physics, that energy cannot be created or destroyed. So I think it just, it kind of fits into how I think about things within the mold of this show.
This show does a very, does a lot of interesting things with its ideas.
Let's see. I cannot take a definitive position, definite position on this, and I hope the show never does. It works so well if it is, like an in-between or unknown thing. I feel like this is, Harry Houdini we are seeing. He is flawed and passionate and acting with a measure of patriarchy that befits his time, but these are all things we can carry within us. Akari knows about Houdini's skepticism, and it is likely she has shared with her spiritualist friends, what he did to expose scammers, so they would know about it too. Besides that, it is very possible that the nanotech that comprises the 15, or the icons, scans the people around it and has data loaded in, to it that causes the 15 heroic icons to act as they do. Anyway, this is all speculative too, but anyway, with that understanding, for me, it seems like they could come out, like, close enough to the historic figure, but also, like, you know, savvy enough to deal with the modern world, because Ryoma popped up, and he was just like, hey, I'm Ryoma, I'm gonna help people make their lives better, and he wasn't like, what, cars? What's going on? Or anything like
yeah,
that, so.
They wouldn't have the time to do that, given that it is, like, 20-minute episodes, so.
Yeah. And, like, Himiko was just like, hey, this is how I feel about some stuff. Also, Edison's a butt. Not, holy crud, what's electricity?
Right.
Not Edison, Newton.
Oh, yeah, Newton.
Well, Edison.
But still.
Well, Edison was a butt, too.
Probably also thinks Edison's a butt, though, because he was.
Way to represent the home team, right, Sono? okay, so, forcing perspective, our final question, and we're gonna get out of here. Okay, so I wanna ask about Yuki's dad actually coming back to life because of the odd way they showed it, or Igor summoning him, but should we leave this till next week, I'm wondering?
No, I wanna talk about this, because I originally had this up under Bones, but moved it down here since you asked the question. Because, okay, so if we have an item that belongs to someone, we can just bring them back from the dead? Why have we not been exploring that more? We had 99 days of Ryu just existing in the afterlife. It wouldn't have been hard to, like, mess with Takeru on that level, because that is fresh territory to start screwing around with our heroes on a Joe Gibkin level. And, I mean, there's still plenty of questions as to whether or not this is actually Yuki's dad on any kind of, like, cognitive level, if his, like, personality is there, or if this is just kind of a brainless container for his knowledge. But if it's the latter, that's even literally more of a Joe Gibkin level, and all the more reason to use it to start screwing with the hero side.
See, for me, I feel like this really falls in line with the way heroic icons are summoned, and it makes me think that the whole mechanic of how they work is really slick, in that it leaves a lot of room for interpretation while just working, absolutely working. Perhaps this points to an intrinsic link between the physical and spiritual worlds, which, Sona, if you're talking about physics and the conservation of matter and energy, that works. I guess it, Yuki, right? Yuki Hakusei's intellect and ability resonated with his classes?
No, Yuki is the girl's first name.
Okay, I always get confused. So, Yuki's dad. You know, like, maybe his intellect and ability resonated with his glasses, because they were, you know, in close contact to him all the time, and the, like, Ganma nanotech can work off of that to create a facsimile of him that has his abilities, but truly lacks the spirit of the man.
You definitely articulated that in kind of a much better way than my last paragraph did, because I was just thinking more on the lines of, why have we not been doing this already?
Well, you could throw Takeru's book into a Ganma thing, and maybe Ryu would pop out.
Yeah, and then be like, Ryu, hey, go beat up that kid.
Oh, man.
go beat up him and the kid in the blue pants.
Oh, man.
Because they will not fight back.
That would make for a... Oh, man, that would make for quite an episode.
I mean, this is literally, like, the Joe Gibkin school of having your life ruined.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even back to Geki Ranger, they did a very similar thing with Jan's father, eventually.
I'm trying to think when this sort of thing happened in Rider last time.
I really don't think they've done something quite like that.
Yeah, yeah.
In Rider.
I think it was Scorpion Man. That's the last time they did.
Oh, really? I mean, Scorpion.
There is a bit of the Double Decade movie war.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
With a bit with how they handled Skull in that.
Yeah.
But not quite, because that was just a completely alternate universe dude.
Right.
But really, I don't think this is. Oh no, Kabuto.
Oh yeah.
That's literally the plot of Kabuto.
Oh yeah.
Never mind.
Oh yeah.
Never mind, that's the whole plot.
I don't need to know that just yet.
I'm not going to say where that's coming from in the plot, but it's there.
Okay. We should get going, though.
Yeah, that's pretty much all for this episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so on behalf of the Toad Network's Uncommon Cast RX, and everybody here, I would like to say thank you for listening. I am Ahmed.
I am the Destroyer of Worlds, Cannibal Sarasanian.
And I'm Sono.
Alright, well, we'll see you next time, everybody. Team Cap, go. That's all I have to say, I suppose.
Later, folks.
Bye-bye!